I think I was kind of a typical liberal arts student in college where I just didn't know what I wanted to do. You know, college was really a time where I was able to explore a lot of different fields.
That is Lisa White, a software engineer over at TaskRay. I'm Josh Burke, your host of the Salesforce Developer Podcast. And here in the podcast, you'll hear stories and insights from developers for developers. Today, we sit down and talk with Lisa about her many different career choices and how she learned JavaScript and got her current job. Now, we're going to return right where we left off there from that cold quote with her early years.
And ended up just majoring and studying in the things that interested me. And even still then, when I got to my senior year of college with studying psychology and environmental studies, I was like, well, how am I going to translate this to a career? So,
right.
Yeah, I think for a while I was still trying to figure that out. But I think over the course of my career, I was able to navigate some transitions and figure out how, you know, along the way I was gaining transferable skills, no matter what I was studying or where I was working.
What did you end up doing right after college?
Yeah, so it was interesting. I had the compounding factor of graduating college in 2008, which, as we know, was not a great time to be looking for a job.
Yep.
But I ended up working for a small company called SmartBrief, and they were a digital media publisher. So they published targeted business news and information by industry. It was essentially like a couple hundred different email newsletters all across different industries. And my function there was that I was working in advertising sales. So I was a sales associate. I was supporting the advertising account executives, doing prospecting work, attending various trade shows and finding leads. And then I was also doing some like kind of sales operations support. And it was that latter part, the operational support, that I really gravitated toward. And I think my manager and the VP of sales really saw that. And it just so happened that the company was also doing a CRM migration. So they had been using an old system and decided to migrate over to Salesforce. And they saw that I kind of had a knack for that kind of stuff and that I was enjoying kind of getting into the weeds, making sure that the data quality in our CRM was good and things like that. So they asked me to help with that Salesforce migration process.
Gotcha. So prior to that, like, okay, so sort of a segue, but what's your earliest memory of the computer itself?
Oh gosh. So I remember early in school, the, you know, pre-Windows days of computers when you were, you know, using MS-DOS and things like that. Yep. And certainly I remember like my first PC at home and the exciting time of getting dial-up internet and things like that. Yep. You know, that was a great time when you were trying to, you know, make sure you were going back and forth between using the computer and the phone.
Right.
So yeah, I mean, for a long time, computers for me were really just where I accessed the internet, where I played games, and where I did, you know, simple things like word processing. But, you know, it wasn't until much later in my career that I actually got into programming.
Gotcha. I mean, I'm a TRS-80 kid myself, so.
Nice.
Can't talk. So you kind of would you describe this as sort of like getting in through like the accidental admin role? Like you had a proclivity for good data and the operations side of it, and it just sort of like you just kind of grew these technical arms?
Yeah, absolutely. So I think, you know, at the time, because this was like 2008 to 2010 that I was first originally exposed to Salesforce, I don't think accidental admin was even a term at that point, but I definitely just kind of fell into it. And it was really exciting. The company is working with an outside consultant to help us implement Salesforce properly. And I worked with them closely to make sure that we were setting up Salesforce to work with our business processes. And then I became the person that was responsible for training everyone in the sales org, building reports and dashboards for senior management, and really just making sure that we were utilizing Salesforce to its full potential. So it was exciting. I really enjoyed that. And I feel like that was sort of something that I maybe didn't realize until later in my career, that I sort of always had this common theme of kind of gravitating toward analytical and technical tasks. Because at the same time, like most of my career was actually very client-facing work. You know, I started working in sales and transitioned into working in higher education administration, where I was working in college admissions. So I was traveling around speaking about the university I was working at college fairs and information sessions, and was a career coach for a while, working one-on-one with students. So, you know, a lot of my career was very people-facing, but right. I still at the same time was always kind of gravitating toward the other type of work as well.
And so what I found over the years is that there are people who have become better like consultants and to a certain extent better software engineers simply because for one reason or another, they ended up getting those kind of like interpersonal skills. Mm-hmm. And you kind of left the Salesforce ecosystem for a bit, right? Like, was this when you were doing the admissions and the student work?
Yeah, absolutely. Okay. So it was a good decade that I was away from Salesforce. So it was funny kind of coming back into the ecosystem, and it's like, my gosh, a lot has changed. You know, there were a lot of acquisitions, a lot yep. of different products, and, you know, Lightning Experience became something that I hadn't been exposed to. So yeah, I was away from Salesforce for a while, even though there are many higher education institutions that utilize Salesforce. Mm-hmm. Just the specific places and offices where I worked, I was not using Salesforce. So it was very interesting how my career kind of magically ended up doing a 360 there.
Because you didn't just do a 360, you started focusing specifically on like development itself. When did you start thinking you wanted to learn JavaScript and go beyond just the technical and analytical things that you had worked on in the past?
Yeah, I mean, you're right. I didn't kind of specifically target Salesforce as my way of getting back into technology. Mm-hmm. So I guess what kind of happened is that I was getting to a point in my career where I was feeling like I was enjoying what I was doing, but I felt like something was missing a little
gotcha.
Bit. And
okay.
I had mentioned that I had actually been a career coach and had worked in career services in academia
right.
for many years. And it was funny that I had this moment of, well, I think I need to do some of these practices where, you know, I'm helping students with their job uh-huh. search. I need to apply some of that to myself now. And really
yeah,
start
career
thinking
coach,
about
coach
it.
Thyself kind of stuff.
Yeah,
right? Yeah
exactly.
Okay.
Exactly. So
yeah.
So I became, you know, my own kind of student for a bit and coached myself about really what did I want to do next in my career. And mm-hmm. I think that can be a daunting thing. And I'm sure a lot mm-hmm. of listeners have been in that position where, you know, your career's fine, or maybe it's less than fine, but you just don't know what you want to do next. And you're mm-hmm. feeling kind of stuck about how to even approach that journey. So something that I had done a lot when I was a career coach and working with students is really trying to break it down so that it didn't feel as heavy. You know, it really felt like you could just sort of take at least one next step. So a good way of kind of getting started is thinking about career exploration first. Thinking okay. about like what are your skills, interests, and values, and trying to do some reflection and assessment there to see how is your current role fitting those things, and then where is it missing? Like where do you need to sort of think about how you can realign your skills, interests, and values in your new career. And that was really my first step that kind of led me toward software development. There's a book that I love and I've used a lot with students called Designing Your Life. And that book, it's written by some Stanford professors that have a background in design thinking. And they actually apply some design thinking methodology to the career search process. And I love some of the different activities that they have.
Yeah.
One of them that really helped me was a journaling exercise where essentially for a week at work, I wrote down almost every single task that I did during the day.
Yeah.
And then I rated the task in terms of how engaged I was and how much energy it brought me. And that sounds pretty simple. Like, I'm sure you could sit there during a workday and just be like, oh, this is fun or this is less fun. But right. I think the intentionality of doing a journaling exercise around it really allowed me to see what I was talking about earlier, that throughout the work week, I just felt like I was the most engaged and the most energized when I was doing tasks that were more technically inclined. And so for me, that was really what uncovered the sort of theme that I sort of knew existed with me, but I really wanted to tap into it more. And then from there, I started thinking about some different careers where I would be able to utilize those skills more.
Yeah.
And that's where software engineering came up as something that I wanted to explore. And so I talked to a lot of people in my network that were currently working as software engineers, and everything that I was hearing about their day-to-day work and what they enjoyed about working as an engineer were things that really resonated with me. And that's ultimately what kind of made me decide to go all in on that path.
Got it. How to phrase this? Let me take a step back to phrase it, actually, because it's a conversation I've had with a lot of people who kind of come in cold to learn something like JavaScript. Mm-hmm. How hard was it for you to tell yourself, you don't have a computer science degree, blah, 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 but JavaScript is something that you're going to tackle? Like, was it a hard conversation to have with yourself?
It was, I think, especially because I had had a pretty thorough career in a different field as well.
Right.
So it wasn't just a career change. It also almost felt like an identity shift in some
right.
ways, you know, where like I had sort of thought of myself as like, yep, this is what I'm doing with my life.
Right.
This is kind of the path that I decided. And so kind of deciding later in life that I wanted to do something entirely different was difficult. But
yeah.
I think that some good advice that I got from some people in my network is that, especially with something like this, just trying to validate that it is something that you want to go all in for. So
yeah.
Luckily with something like coding, it is easy to sort of dabble in it before you go all in. So that's what I did at first, is that I, you know, used some free resources out there like Free Code Camp and Codecademy, and just, you know, had my first Hello World moment and realized like, oh, wow, this is actually fun. Like I'm enjoying learning this. And that then validated that, like, yes, I am willing to put in the time and effort to do this big leap. I think that if I hadn't been able to sort of test the waters or talk to as many people beforehand, it would have felt even scarier, but I feel like I had enough touch points where I had sort of told myself like, yep, I do want to do this. Let's continue. Let's get
mm-hmm.
at it.
mm-hmm. Well, and it's one of the things I've loved about JavaScript. And when people have asked me like, you know, do you think I could learn to code? And I'm like, anybody can learn to code. Mm-hmm. And then like, well, where should I start? And a lot of times I'm like, go start with JavaScript. And not just because even before, honestly, it became one of the most employable languages that you should have in, you know, under your belt. But I'm also like, you just pull up a browser. Like that's all you
yep.
need in order to play with it. You just need a browser. It's totally free. And once you get that, I love that part, because it's like, once you get that Hello World moment and you realize, I can tell this thing what to do.
Yep. Yep. And that was part of what I loved about it, and part of what I really enjoy about being a developer, is that you really can see the direct impact of your work. It's really
yeah.
exciting to be writing code and then seeing how that affects what you're seeing in your web browser, and knowing that there are users out there that are using the things that you're helping to build. I think that
right.
that's a really gratifying thing, and something that I really enjoy about being
nice.
A developer.
Yeah. Nice. Now, when it came to learning JavaScript, you also participated in something called Hack Reactor, I believe. Tell
yep.
me a little bit more about that. Like, what was it and how did it work?
Yeah, absolutely. So after I had done some of my own self-learning, I actually did kind of like a pre-software engineering bootcamp course is what I would call it. So it was like a 6-week course in JavaScript. And it was with people that were like me, that were thinking about doing a software engineering bootcamp, and then also some other people that were just kind of quote unquote code curious. Like they just kind of wanted to like know, you know, maybe they worked in like technical sales or something and just like wanted to have a better sense of like what coding was.
Right.
And that was a really great opportunity that, again, just kind of solidified that I wanted to keep going on this path. So then once I finished that, that's where I ended up applying to several different software engineering boot camps and immersives. And I ended up going with the Hack Reactor program. That program was full stack JavaScript. So JavaScript was really the only language that I was learning in that. It was a 3-month program. It was very intense. but it was pretty much just 3 months of nonstop learning how to code, learning the essential skills of being a software developer. And it was an interesting experience for me, I think, especially as someone that, you know, I'd spent the bulk of my career working in traditional higher education to kind of then opt for a program like a software engineering bootcamp. But I think for me, it served what I needed at that time, which was a structured educational experience that was short enough. You know, I wasn't really willing at that point in my career to go back and get another 4-year degree or something like that. But it gave me just kind of the basic skills that I needed to then feel confident in applying to some entry-level software engineering positions.
Gotcha. And what led from those, you know, junior developer roles to coming back to the Salesforce ecosystem?
Yeah. So when I finished up the bootcamp, I was really just looking for any kind of entry level software engineering role, you know, given the background that I had with Hack Reactor of working with JavaScript and React. And I actually just kind of happened to come across a job posting at my current employer, TaskRay. TaskRay is a Salesforce ISV partner, and they were looking for a junior software engineer that had experience with JavaScript and React, because we do use React on our front end. But then with it being a Salesforce ISV, it was something where I was going to be exposed to Salesforce development. And, you know, I had that kind of long ago accidental admin experience. Right. So I, you know, mentioned that in the interview process that at least I had some familiarity with Salesforce, and, you know, was lucky enough to land that opportunity.
Which is a lot. Like, I think one of the hardest things people who come from like a full stack or traditional web development background, one of the barriers is understanding how our data model is similar to a database, but also how it's very, very different from a database. And so I would imagine having that already in your back pocket was probably a big boon.
Yeah, I think it helped at least that I could come in with some understanding of, you know, what is Salesforce? How do companies use it? How would TaskRay's customers be using TaskRay on top of Salesforce? Like those types of things, I felt like I had a little bit more of an understanding given my former experience with it. But again, having stepped away for such a long time, a lot had changed. And also it was very different having been more of an end user and an accidental admin to come back in, relearn, you know, Salesforce, what it is today, but then also understand all of the different complexities of developing on the Salesforce platform. So there was certainly a lot of learning that happened with that.
I am only just now realizing this question. Did you end up basically skipping Visual Force?
Yeah, pretty much.
Wow.
I guess in the sense that, to be fair, though, we still do use Visual Force in the TaskRay product.
Okay.
But in terms of like, I kind of skipped over some of what some people would think is like very legacy stuff, because I had not been a developer previously. So as I walked into, you know, Salesforce development in 2020, like that's really what I was working with.
Because I'm trying to put the dates together, but it sounds like if you were doing any greenfield development, it probably at least would have been Aura, right?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yep. So, yep.
You didn't miss much.
Yep.
Visual Force, I think, I really actually, towards the end of Visual Force's run, when they started dealing with like remote objects and it was extremely JavaScript friendly and all of this kind of stuff, that's when I kind of started to learn to love the product, and then we came out with Aura. So, you know,
Yeah. And I will say with that too, that, I mean, you're right with doing like greenfield development. You know, we're using the latest and greatest in Salesforce development options, but TaskRay is actually, it's a legacy app.
Yeah.
I mean, it's been around for 10 years. So it is also interesting that through the code base, I can see the history of the things that maybe I had been less exposed to because I had sort of skipped out on those years of the Salesforce ecosystem.
Gotcha. How, with a background in now armed with JavaScript and React and kind of full stack, you know, JavaScript development, how easy was it to kind of morph those skills into like Apex and LWC?
Yeah, I would say that the first thing with that is that I had asked this of many people when I was going through my career transition of like, you know, what language do you start with and how many languages should you learn? And a lot of people said, you know, focus on one, start with that. And then any subsequent language that you learn after that will be easier. Yep. And I do agree with that. I think that it was good that I had sort of the singular focus on JavaScript initially, and then coming into TaskRay and having to learn Apex, like, you know, there was definitely a learning curve. You know, I was like, what are all these types? Like, you know, things like that. But I think it helped that I had at least, you know, a good level of comfort in one language before coming into Apex. But it definitely was kind of a mental shift because I was used to, in my bootcamp experience, I was building a lot of my own, like, you know, kind of CRUD and to-do apps and building them out full stack. And then, you know, you get into this environment where it's like, wow, like the back end is just like totally different. And then your database is Salesforce. Like, how is all of this going to be working together? So I think just sort of wrapping my head around how all of those pieces work was definitely something that took some time to understand. But you know, once I got in there, it definitely started to click and make sense.
Do you have any advice for somebody who's kind of maybe following you in your footsteps, like somebody who's starting a brand new junior development role?
Yeah, I think that's a good question. You know, especially if it's someone that is changing careers too, I think that there's a lot of different tips and things to think about. But I think first and foremost, when I stepped into this new role, I asked for feedback often. I also asked a lot of questions. I sort of learned that, you know, it's not helpful to anyone if I'm stuck on something and I'm just kind of sitting there, you know, banging my head against the wall. So, you know, do some effort to try to find the answer yourself. But if you're clearly stuck on something, definitely communicate that. I also really, again, going back to the feedback thing, really sought out opportunities to try to do some pair programming with my peers who were more senior developers. Definitely embraced code reviews, knowing that, you know, they're not personal attacks. It's more just opportunities for me to learn and for me to become a better developer. So those are all some things that I think someone coming into a new junior role should be thinking about.
Yeah,
I think another thing that worked well for me might not work well for everyone, but I actually kind of kept like a developer journal and notes throughout my time. So like every sprint when I was working on something, and I would sort of like literally just write out what I was doing so that I had this sort of journal to come back to.
Right.
Which helped a lot in cases where, you know, maybe I came across a problem and then, you know, a month later was running into the same problem. I could sort of re-reference my notes and be like, oh yeah, I had experienced this before. Let me figure out how I got myself out of this situation previously.
Nice.
And another good thing with that, because, you know, I think all developers can relate to this, that there's just so much to learn and there's so much information out there that it can sometimes feel a little bit discouraging where you're like, am I even getting better? You know, it's like, I just feel like I'm constantly running into situations where I'm exposed to new things and I have to keep learning new things. But re-referencing, my notes and kind of my journal throughout my work has helped me to realize that, like, yes, I am progressing. Like, mm-hmm. I can look back to stuff that I, you know, that was difficult for me early on. And now I'm like, yep, I got that. I've moved on from that. And it really helps you focus on your accomplishments, which I think is really helpful as you're moving into a new career.
Yeah. I'm reminded of the interview with Ryan Brainard So Ryan Brainard's the creator of Workbench, and I didn't realize he actually learned PHP by writing Workbench. It was the first coding that he'd ever done. And his joke was, yeah, I'm one of the few people on the internet that you can see just how I learned programming through my GitHub repo. Like you can see all the mistakes I made, you know, back in the day. And then I learned how, like, you know, classes work and all this kind of stuff.
Yep. It is a funny moment when you're working on something and you're looking at the code and you're like, who wrote that? And you're like, oh, yeah, that was me.
Yeah, I made the mistake of putting a lot of that journaling into my code comments. And I think every now and then, yeah, exactly. You have to remember that you're not necessarily going to be the only person who will read those 3 years later. So
yeah, exactly.
Yeah. So it does definitely sound like, though, you know, you brought a lot of that early experience of networking and talking to people and having one-on-ones and all of that kind of stuff. Like, that kind of helped, like, give you a firmament for a new role.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Yeah. I think that, you know, I do feel strongly that people gain transferable skills no matter what industry they're in.
Right.
And I was very happy that I landed in an environment in my first developer job where I felt like I could utilize those skills and that they were wanted and valued, and that it did allow me to kind of get comfortable in this new role because I was not afraid to to ask questions and communicate with people and work in a team and things like that.
Completely agree. Well, let's bring it back to, you know, modern times. You are a junior developer no more.
Yep.
You presented at Dreamforce on JavaScript and date time and UTC. What brought you to want to talk about that?
It's a great question because that's often a pain point for a lot of people working with dates. So you may be wondering why I decided to go down that path. But it actually stemmed from something that I was working on at TaskRay. We were building out a new feature, essentially a new view in the app. And when we were in development, we were noticing that when we were rendering date fields, that they were consistently off by one. And so that was something that I got assigned to kind of like figure out why that was happening, essentially. So I dug into that and figured out that we just needed to do a little fix with ensuring that the dates were kept in UTC time. And then that was going to fix that and that we were going to be good to go with that new feature. And something that we do at TaskRay, so we work on 2-week sprints, and at the end of each sprint, we do a sprint demo. And it's actually something that we do for the entire company. Like, everyone's invited to come. So it's technical and non-technical people. And really the purpose of it is to show the company what we're working on and to educate them about new features and just give them kind of like a view of what's going on in the development landscape, because I feel like oftentimes our work is behind closed doors. So after working on kind of fixing this thing that we with the date issue, at the sprint demo following, I ended up kind of giving a presentation essentially about working with dates. Because it felt like something that it was just something that's mysterious for a lot of people, especially non-technical colleagues. So I sort of gave an overview of like, hey, here's some basic date-related terminology. Here's how dates are sort of represented in different languages. And, you know, here's how I ended up fixing this date problem. So that had happened. And then it sort of became like a little bit of an inside joke of like, oh, remember when Lisa talked about dates for a while at the sprint demo? And then when the call for proposals came around for Dreamforce, so my manager encouraged me to submit a proposal. And so I was trying to think back to, you know, what's something that I feel like I could talk about? And that sprint demo kind of came up as, you know, maybe there is something here. Maybe I could talk about dates at Dreamforce. So that's what led to me talking about working with dates.
Well, I think it is such a great topic because it's like, first of all, I think to the non-technical person in the room, they would be like, well, what's the big deal? It's a date. It's a singular thing. What could possibly go wrong with it? And yet I don't know. I bet, you know, any developer who's got 5 years under his belt has run into something weird. You know, it's like somebody didn't put in the leap year math or, you know, something that I can't remember the specifics, but I remember I was on a project and we were working with a QA team in China. And they kept reporting a bug that we could never replicate. And the reason we could never replicate was because the way somebody had hard-coded the time math, you literally could only see this bug in China.
Yep, that is an all too familiar story when working with dates, that they can just be, you know, these bugs can be quite mysterious. They might only appear at different times of year or in very certain places.
And they're hard to test for. Like, how do you write a unit test for an edge case like that without knowing the edge case exists in the first place?
Exactly. Yeah. So even though it was something that, you know, again, it's a pain point for a lot of people and maybe not the most exciting topic, I think it is something that, like, every developer pretty much has been there dealing with some kind of frustrating thing with dates. Yeah. So that was really what I wanted to present during my Dreamforce session was, you know, hey, this is something that again, we've all been there dealing with this. So let's talk about some ways to make this easier. That was kind of my goal in my session.
Yeah. I do want to give a call out to one of the takeaways you've got in that presentation. Can you give a quick shout out to the date.js library?
Yeah, absolutely. So I mean, JavaScript, the date object, is painful sometimes, right? So first starting out with that. So oftentimes it is helpful to use a third-party JavaScript date library, especially if you're going to be doing some more complicated like date calculations and manipulation and things like that. So so that is something that, you know, I use in my day job at TaskRay, we use a third-party date library. And so I wanted to be able to show people how you could use one with Lightning Web Components. So in my Dreamforce session, I showed how you can import something like Day.js as a static resource and then use it within a Lightning Web Component to help you with some of that date calculation and manipulation. So yeah, that was, I think, something that is helpful for folks, especially if you want to make your life a little bit easier. So, so yeah, that was one of the key takeaways from my presentation is how you can import and utilize a third-party library.
Yeah. Well, and I love libraries like that one, because I think another cautionary tale I would tell developers is before you start writing your own utility class library style thing that wraps around an object like the date object to make it friendlier and prettier and easier to talk to, somebody else probably already has.
Yep, exactly. don't necessarily look to reinvent the wheel right away. There's probably a good library out there. So and it's going to be interesting. I don't know if this is something that you had seen, but I had, in preparation for the Dreamforce presentation, I noticed that there is actually a proposal for a new JavaScript date API.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, called Temporal. And so it will be interesting to see when that comes out, like what's, you know, if these third-party libraries are still going to be as useful or if this new API is going to kind of get rid of some of the pain points that we've experienced previously. But you know, that kind of goes to another point that I had in my Dreamforce session is that this stuff continues to change. You know, it's hard to kind of stay on top of everything with it.
Right. So sometimes the end result of software is just going to be becoming obsolete. The evolution of things. Quickly, do you have, so this was your, you know, you have a lot of different skills and talking to people and you've done presenting before and stuff like that. But do you have any tips? Like if somebody's like, maybe I do want to submit something to Dreamforce and maybe I want to get on stage. Any tips or advice for them?
Yeah, absolutely. First and foremost, I would say go ahead and submit a proposal. Uh-huh. It is not going to hurt to just get that proposal in there and to see what happens.
Right.
I will say that I was lucky that my manager has actually spoken at Dreamforce several times previously. So it was really nice to have someone that I could talk to that gave me some really practical advice as I was creating my presentation and as I was practicing it. But even if you don't have someone that you know personally that's done that, I would say reach out to someone. Mm-hmm. You know, you can look at previous speakers at Dreamforce or at other conferences and just ask them for their advice about how to get started. I think it's a great opportunity because it forces you to be able to communicate a topic to a broad audience. And right. I think that in preparing for my Dreamforce presentation, I mean, I learned a lot. I would not have called myself an expert on working with dates, but you know, I did a lot of research. I had to create a demo. And yep. all of that stuff is just really valuable. And I think it's something that can allow you to grow a lot professionally. So I would say go for it, give it a try, and also make sure that, again, you utilize your support system or other people in your network to help you out with it as well. My colleagues were very patient, and I practiced my presentation a couple of times with them, and it was great to get their advice and feedback.
And that's our show. Now, before we go, I did ask after Lisa's favorite non-technical hobby, and well, it's a fairly unique sport.
Oh, gosh. Well, we are recording this in winter, so yes. I'm going to mention something that I do this time of year, and that is curling.
Really?
Yep. I am a member of a curling club here in Denver, and I'm in a league where I curl once a week, and
wow.
it is a very fun sport. I know it's mysterious for a lot of people. It's like, why are you sweeping ice and throwing stones and things like that? But it's really fun. It's very challenging. It's a hard sport to get good at, but I kind of love the challenge of it.
Because I kind of feel like I'm in that camp. I'm not sure I understand curling much more than I understand cricket, to be honest.
Yep, yep.
But the rules are similar to bocce, right? Isn't it about launching some kind of projectile and then try to get as close to the mark as possible? And if you can't do that, then knock out your opponents?
Yep, yep. Okay. Pretty much it. And yeah, a lot of people equate it to chess on ice, essentially. It's a lot of strategy. The sweeping actually does do something.
Right.
It actually makes the stone go further and straighter if you sweep harder. So yeah, it's a fun sport. I enjoy it.
I want to thank Lisa for the great conversation and information. And as always, I want to thank you for listening. Now, if you want to learn more about this show, head on over to developer.salesforce.com/podcast, where you can hear old episodes, see the show notes, and have links to your favorite podcast service. Thanks again, everybody. I'll talk to you next week.